Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
Always lovely to welcome consumer journalist Wendy Nola to the show. Wendy, hope you're doing well.
I am, Pippa. Thanks. Good to be with you.
We've got two stories to cover today and hopefully some time for a couple of open line calls at the end as well. We're going to start with the tale of a frugal listener whose electricity saving habits made her bill so small the city didn't believe she wasn't cheating. So we'll talk about her struggle to convince them that she wasn't stealing power. After that, we're taking a look at a popular booking site for holiday accommodation, which has seen quite the flurry of complaints of late around slow or non-existent refunds, and we'll find out exactly what's going on there. So if you want to join those conversations, the number to dial is 021-446-0567, or you can leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Now, Wendy, I really felt our first story today, and I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people who would be seriously offended to be accused of criminal dishonesty like theft, or to be falsely accused of anything for that matter. It's not something anyone would want happening to them, but it is what happened to one of our listeners, and she's had quite a time disproving the claim and shrugging off the financial penalty that came with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it does horrible things to one's psyche. We've touched on this issue with people who have been accused of shoplifting, Pippa, and they say it was completely accidental. There has to be mindfulness, really, in order to have criminal, you know, for it to be criminal, there needs to be intent. So what happened was Heidi Steinbruckner, she's a tour guide. She lives in Plattekloof Glen, and she has a pattern over the years, obviously, of being away for extended periods and therefore not being at home and not using the electricity.
Yeah.
To sum up her long saga, she was accused by the City of Cape Town of bypassing her electricity meter. She was found guilty and fined just over 8,000 rand. It had to be paid by the 13th of January. She didn't. She obviously objected to the fine, but more importantly, to being accused or found guilty of doing something that dishonest. She tried to make the argument in a phone call that, you know, her low electricity bill was not due to theft, but due to the fact that, as I say, she was frugal, but that didn't wash. We should have Heidi available to tell us how that all went down.
Absolutely.
In her own words.
Heidi Steinbruckner is with us on the line. Heidi, I'm so sorry you went through this whole saga, but I'm thankful that we've been able to help get it resolved. And thank you for joining us today so that others can learn from your experience. So this all dates back really to September last year, and I believe it starts with a letter in your mailbox saying that your electricity meter was due for an upgrade.
Hello, Wendy. Hello, Pippa. Yes. It started on the 23rd of September when I got this letter in the letterbox, and I looked at it and I thought, all right, upgrade for a new meter, that's plausible, why not? They then did come to upgrade the meter, and the artisan, as they are now called, arrived and did her work. And then she drew my attention to a piece of cable that had been stripped. I'd never seen this before. It was leading from the outside into my prepaid meter box. As I said, I've never seen this before, and I was quite shocked, and I even mentioned that it was pretty shiny. Mm-hmm. Well, I told her also why I was using so little electricity, because I had been flagged. People using under 300 units a month were being flagged, which is understandable. She kind of said, yeah, well, she understands, you know, me being away for so many days a month. After her visit here, I phoned Mr. Jardine at the Department of Electricity, whatever it is that he is in, and I told him the same story. And then I still asked him if I needed to send it to him in writing, and he said, no, it's all fine. Well, then you kind of think, well, it's all fine until the 14th of December when my fine arrived and I made big eyes, and I was told that I had contravened bylaws and whatever, and I had a fine of over 8,000 rand to pay.
Sure.
It wasn't just the fine. That was the little bit of it. Further on in the letter, it would say, and the following fine will still come with all the electricity that I still had to pay afterwards. You can imagine the shock that one gets.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Heidi, so just to be clear on a few things, you have emphatically never tampered with your electricity meter, and that piece of newly exposed cable was something you had never noticed before when looking at your meter.
But to be very honest, I am too stupid. I wouldn't know how to, and I wouldn't know where to start, and I didn't even know that one could.
Okay.
It went through my head like you cannot believe. I didn't sleep at night. I was thinking, how did this happen? I've always been aware that my usage is low compared also with other people, but then again, I'm single. I use gas. I switch my geyser off. I don't live like a hermit, yeah. That's for sure. But it didn't make sense to me. Why would I then also want to steal if I'm using so little in the first place?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. The implication being you are stealing at the same time as saying you're using suspiciously little electricity. Okay, so frugal inhabits away a lot of the time. There's a very logical, rational explanation for why your usage is what it is. And yet the fine arrives. Now, Heidi, you chose to pay the fine, on the 13th of January, but you still felt you wanted to dispute it because you didn't like the feeling of being accused of something unlawful. What did you do to take it further?
That's right. Well, before that even, I had phoned the call center of the city, and they even said, well, that's a bit strange because the fine hadn't been loaded onto my meter account. And they even said, "No, that's a bit strange," because then I started thinking, "Hang on, is this, you know, is this really a fine, or is, you know, something else happening?
Is there a scam underway here?"
Yeah, hello, that's the word. Yeah. Then basically, well, go down to the municipal offices, and they couldn't help me any further. They told me to go back and phone Mr. Jardine, who's not been answering his phone, because they couldn't pick up anything either. They gave me three further phone numbers to use. Two of them were not to be used, or out of order or something like that, and or not existing was the word, and third number, there was also no answer. I then wrote an email to Mr. Jardine on the 13th, stating exactly my case. There was an out-of-office message that bounced back to me, and I didn't pick it up because it went directly into my spam folder. So now I stood there and I didn't know what to do. I paid the fine because I thought, oh my goodness, you know, I don't want another fine on top of the fine on top of the fine. And that is when I then decided to get hold of Cheryl Siffer, who is my ward councillor. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, they are being paid, so use them.
Absolutely.
And, this was on the 15th of January. It was on I think, a Friday, so, you know, give it a couple of days. On the 19th, I got an email, and within, I think, about 3 or 4 hours, the whole thing was solved. I sat there and I was watching these emails coming in because I was copied on every one of the emails, and I was thinking, my goodness me. In the end, Mr. Leach phoned me and said, yeah, well, they did have a look at my usage and agree with me that I'm not stealing. And I was thinking, why didn't you do this right in the beginning, and why not already on the 28th of September when I phoned Mr. Jardine in the first place?
Yeah. Well, that is the million-dollar question, Heidi. Yeah. And Heidi, please stay with us on the line because Wendy's going to get some feedback from her investigations, and I'm interested to hear your response to them because Wendy and I were being CC'd on some of this correspondence at this point. And Wendy, I mean, the key thing is Heidi has been absolved. She's got her money back from that fine refunded. She has been cleared, as it were, and the city has acknowledged that she was not trying to steal electricity. But there's a bigger question here, and you put it to the city.
I did. I said, you know, why, as Heidi's just said, why wasn't the full investigation or the full consideration of the circumstances of this case done before finding Heidi guilty of contravening that bylaw and finding her accordingly? Because I said, in my email to the city, to accuse someone of dishonesty is an incredibly serious matter. So, you know, surely that full investigation should have been done. Heidi had said to me in an email, I would not like anyone else to go through this again, particularly not a soft target. Right now, I'm happy to have proven myself not guilty of stealing. I also asked how many people had been found to have bypassed their meters, say, in 2020. Maybe that was a wrong year to choose, given
yeah.
it was so not normal. But I also wanted to know how many of those findings had been reversed after homeowners or tenants had disputed the finding, and as a result of that, a more thorough investigation had been done. I did get a response. It came in the name of Councillor Pendili Matriti of the Mayoral Committee. She's the Mayoral Committee Member for Energy and Climate Change. And this is how it goes. The City of Cape Town's approach to cases of electricity tampering is compliant, and our standard operating processes ensures blah, blah, blah. It includes giving people a 21-day opportunity to submit objections to us. She says, in this case, the contravention notice was issued based on finding insulation tape and bare copper conductors on the incoming serviceman. So this is between the meter and Heidi's home. As I sort of said privately, if I can deviate from the response, if in fact she did do that and she was wily enough to do it, surely knowing that she had an appointment for someone to come in from the department to come and upgrade her meter or change it or whatever, surely she would have been wily enough to try and cover up evidence of her tampering. We would have thought so. Anyway, while the customer did make contact with the correct individual in the city, that was Mr. Jardine, no clear detail was provided to substantiate the withdrawal of the contravention notice. And I think we'll hear from Heidi on that. It was only when the customer approached Councillor Cheryl Fisser that the matter was further unearthed in correspondence to Mr. Barry Leach of the Electricity Department. The additional information compared favorably with the customer's purchase history and was deemed to be plausible and sufficient to withdraw the contravention note. Unfortunately, the 21-day period allowing the customer the opportunity to make representation was not utilized and should have been done, as it would have avoided the unnecessary loading of the contravention notice. You remember in her discussion with Mr. Jardine, that official, he seemed to accept her explanation and should I put it in writing, and he said, no, this will be fine. The councillor said it's important to remember that all due processes were followed. Basically, they did everything right. We thank the customer for her understanding, and she should not hesitate to contact us at all should she have any further questions or input.
So, Heidi, how
question remains.
I'm interested to hear how Heidi feels hearing that response, particularly the comment that you should have utilized the 21-day notice period when you tried so awfully hard to do so.
Well, let's go right back to the 28th of September when I told Ntombi, and that should have gone into her note to Mr. Jardine, when I spoke to Mr. Jardine on the telephone. I mean, I told two people, why were they not taking notes? Why was it not on the report of the artisan that worked here? Why was she so proud to say, oh, look, tampering, but not that little bit of extra information that I had given her? So it all seems to be very, very one-sided. The amount of telephone calls that I had made and had gone to the municipality and everything, yes, one can say that it is my fault for not having written a letter or an email to Mr. Jardine.
Okay, and look, and you can also say that that is his fault for telling you that you didn't need to do that, Heidi, but at least everybody else listening today can learn from your awful experience. Oh. And thank you so much for the good humor you've shown in sharing it with us today. I'm just relieved to know that it has been resolved in your favor.
You know, Pippa, if you can't see anything with humor at the moment, then you must just find yourself a little dark corner and go and sit in it and suck your thumb. I was thinking of giving up, and I thought, no, don't. This is my pride. I am not a thief. I am a trustworthy person, and I want to pull this through. I must also say thank you to Chantal Seymour in the accounts department for having phoned me, because they said, oh, well, creditor in the unit for 8,000
rand.
Chantal said, no. And she did then send me the form so that they could send it back to me onto my bank account. So thanks to Chantal.
And thank you to you, Heidi Steinbrück. Now we've got
that is of paramount importance to a particular group of people.
Oh, and I know that they listen to your show, John, so that's very, very exciting, and enjoy the conversation. Yeah, the breaking news at the start of this hour, the cancellation of the Comrades Marathon. Once again, I'm afraid for those who missed it, not going ahead with the centenary race on the 13th of June. No comments yet from those of you who had entered. I don't know if any of you had... Well, if they'd even opened entries, given what happened last year. But we'll maybe have time to chat about that a little bit later. I just want to wrap up the conversation with Wendy Nola about this electricity case. And, Wendy, there's some very interesting feedback coming in from listeners. Firstly, to the mention that anybody who uses less than 300 units a month will be automatically flagged. Greg saying, I only use about 120 units a month, but then I am a hermit. He says, fair enough. But that's just... it's interesting to... note, and if you are
many people into hermits.
I just think it's worth noting for the perspective that if you are a low user, check your bill and be aware of that fact that you might be flagged for inspections and the like, and hopefully 99.99% of the people who are in that category have nothing to worry about. I don't want in any way to imply that there's not an issue with electricity tampering and that the city doesn't have the right to investigate, because we know that electricity theft is a reality, but it's investigate properly and do so before you reach a decision and issue the fine, as happened in this case. This is more a legal question than a consumer one, but somebody's asking, Wendy, whether you think Heidi has grounds to institute a defamation case against the city for what happened.
In terms of the city's bylaws and what have you, I'm pretty sure that they would be covered. My point is that, yes, they found evidence of tampering, but what happened in a very short space of time after the councillor got involved on Heidi's behalf, which is they then took a good look at her consumption pattern, which she had articulated herself much earlier, back in September. This could have been... They could have come to the same conclusion before going ahead and issuing that notice and levying the fine. That was my biggest point out of all of this. It's such a serious matter. You do terrible things to somebody emotionally, psychologically, when you accuse them, you know, somebody that prides themselves on their integrity. It's a very, very serious thing to do. So my point is only, it took such a short time to clear this up and see that, you know, she didn't benefit from any possible tampering. But surely you, before you take such a serious step, you do that first and don't just say, well, we gave you 21 days. You know, look, examine. People don't go to court. Prosecutors shouldn't go to court without fully, you know, making sure they had a solid case. That's why it takes, you know, weeks and months or whatever the case may be. Just to get back quickly to, I did say that I asked the city how many other people had received these notices and then had them overturned as a result of them, you know, making representations. The response was, according to the city's records, there have been no incidents similar to this one recently. However, customers regularly pursue the correct channels of advising us of reasons to retract contravention notices in the 21-day period. In other words, this was all Heidi's fault because she didn't put it in writing, basically. She spoke to the official who, according to her, said, okay, fine, should I put it in writing? She said, no, this will be fine, and she took that at face value, and that clearly, according to the city, was her big mistake.
Okay, Keith's response saying, hearing this story reminds me of my recent dealings with the mind-numbing bureaucracy of the city of Cape Town. It is like being a character in a Kafka novel. Somebody else saying, I would not have paid the fine. Chadwick tells us he has got a 16,000 rand fine from the city for a flat that stood empty they claim electricity is owing on. He's still busy fighting it. And then one last comment on this before we move on. Somebody anonymous saying, electricity meter, both prepaid and credit, do malfunction from time to time. They either stop working still allow electricity pass through them, or they dispense more units than normal. In any case, all meters have seals that have to be broken to tamper with them. The city should have done a more thorough investigation before issuing the fine. And that is the nub. Wendy and I feel as well, which is why we took this on. Thank you very much for that feedback. We're going to take a short break and then come back with the Safari Now accommodation story, and I hope some space for your open line calls as well.
Hi, Pippa. David here. I was just listening to you talking about electricity consumption, and 120 units a month is extremely low. And unless you have solar water heating and an inverter for giving you some electricity, if you've got a normal house with a fridge and a washing machine and a hot water cylinder, and you don't have a pool pump or a well point or anything like that.
Okay, we lost the end of that. I think the implication was there is something fishy about that. Just to clarify, the 120 units is what Greg told us on the SMS line he was using. Under 300 units a month is the level at which there's a sort of a red flag going up on the city system from what we understand. There is, I think, another voice note on this. Let's have a listen.
Hello to Wendy and Pippa. Just an extra thought on the electricity debacle that we have. They're charging us for an availability fee. Surely that is fraudulent. It is not always available. Secondly, they are selling electricity to us for prepaid meters, something which they are not able to supply. So surely that also is totally fraudulent. How can you sell something you don't have? Andy in Great Brack.
Okay, Andy, I don't want to divert into an interrogation of the payment structure of the electricity department. Wendy, I don't know if you want to respond to either of those voice notes before we move on.
I did canvass the city very recently on that availability fee. It came up in a Twitter exchange that I was tagged on. I haven't had enough time to call it up since hearing that, so maybe by the end of the show, I did get a response from the city about that. It's one that they are having to answer to quite a lot, as you can imagine. So if I can get it up and we have time before the end of the show, I'll share it.
Okay, it is a little off on a tangent from the particular case that we're dealing with, but if we can squeeze that in, we'll try and do so. Fair enough. Okay, somebody asking on the WhatsApp, what happened to Mr. Jardine in all of this? I mean, Wendy, one would hope that someone at the city is following up on why he gave Heidi the instruction, as she said he did, not to put it in writing. I don't know if you've heard anything more than that.
I haven't. I haven't had time to go back to them and interrogate that in time for the show, but perhaps it is worth doing so, because it may be the case that, you know, similar things have happened where people have, you know, felt the urgency of the matter, got on the phone, had a discussion and felt that that was all they needed to do. So, yeah, it's definitely worth pursuing.
Okay. And one last comment, Beth saying, I use under 200 units a month. I live in a 3-bedroom flat. I'm just very careful about what I use, as are many people. And that is to be applauded, I think. Okay. Thank you, Glenn. Confirming on the WhatsApp, Comrade's entries had not opened. So that's not going to be an issue. There will probably be a virtual run, he says, like last year. There is going to be a virtual run like last year. Glenn, they did say that in their statement. So thanks for confirming there's no issue this time around refunds of entry fees, because entries simply had not opened. Okay, the second thing we want to talk about today is the flurry of complaints that we've seen on Hello Peter around a popular local accommodation booking site. And one of our listeners was among those who was complaining about being left waiting in vain for money that is owed to her as an accommodation owner. And Wendy, I was surprised when I saw this, because it's a site I've used plenty of times in the past, safarinow.com, and I've never had anything but a good experience with them. Having said that, though, mine have always been fairly uncomplicated bookings that went ahead without the need for cancellations or anything like that. But it does look like something particularly has gone wrong in the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's exactly it. It actually goes back more than a few weeks, but well, certainly if the Hello Peter complaints or anything to go by, I also went onto their Facebook page and I could see the comments underneath their marketing messages going back well into last year, saying, you know, you owe me refunds, pay me back. But it was Heather John, who has a Cape Town holiday apartment, that tipped me off to this issue. She emailed us earlier in the week to say that she's owed R3,500, more or less, by Safari Now for a couple's 4-day stay last month. And it took her by surprise, because she's dealt with them often and always had excellent service, and everything happened, all their communications and everything was normal. We've confirmed this person, they're moving, they're arriving on this date, they've now left, everything was normal, and then she just didn't get
the money.
The payment, which is usually within a day or two. Yeah. And so then she started Googling, and all the alarm bells went off, and she felt that other people should know about it and contacted us.
Okay. Well, we've got Heather on the line with us now. Heather, thank you so much for being willing to chat to us and welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Okay. So as Wendy said, you've dealt with Safari Now many times before and never had these kind of problems before. How long does it usually take to get the money paid over to you for a booking that has been made through Safari Now?
Well, actually, they're normally very reliable. So it usually is a day or two after the guest leaves. They get 50% deposit when the guest books, and then upon leaving, they get the final balance, and you actually get a little note to say that the money has been paid to Safari Now. So I actually saw that the guest had paid and then just waited for my payment, and I waited probably, you know, about 7 days or so, and then I thought, actually, this is not how it normally is. Mm-hmm. So I emailed them. And I didn't get a reply straight away. I emailed them again, and they said, oh, sorry, the payment will be made on Monday. They didn't say Monday. They didn't give a date. So I said, okay, fine. I waited till Monday. I waited till the next Thursday. Nothing happened. Then I tried to email them again. I got no answer. So I tried to phone them. They have an agent, apparently, in Cromarty. That line was discontinued. And then I phoned the head office. There was just a voicemail. So then I started to get really suspicious. And I Googled them, got onto Hello Peter and a whole lot of sites. And I saw that there were a lot of other people waiting for payments or refunds. So I thought, no. And what I was seeing was that they were continuing to advertise, continuing to sell accommodation.
Yes.
But they're not paying the host. And they're not doing the refunds that they should do. So no money's going out. And then I thought, this is actually not on. So I then got a hold of Wendy.
Okay. And literally 20 minutes after Wendy contacted me to say, we're going to take a look at this story, I got an email from Safari Now in my inbox advertising Valentine's breakaway weekends, Wendy. So the marketing machine is still clearly working very efficiently. You reached out to Safari Now for some response, and I believe you had a conversation with their MD, who we did invite to join us on the show today, but didn't want to do so. But Wendy, what did he say to you?
Okay. Safari Now's MD is Tom Williams. He began by saying that the business had been operating for 21 years and we anticipate going for many years to come. It was bought by online travel agency Travel Start just over 3 years ago. As you can expect, he said COVID-19 had a major impact on the company's cash flow. And as a result, several staff members had to be retrenched, leaving the business operating with a skeleton staff. He said, we've incurred losses every month and the shareholders have had to fund this. But we fully anticipate continuing through this and paying all monies owed to all people and then thriving on the other side. About the payments backlog, he said his accounts team had been particularly hard hit. One person resigned, another was on maternity leave, and that added more stress to a difficult situation. He told me on the phone that this was not helped by the fact that a staff member had for some reason not made any payments for 8 to 12 days. So that you could imagine what that did.
Yeah.
He said, but refunds are now being made every day. We're working off a priority list. And he didn't want to commit sort of overpromise, underdeliver to specific dates, but he said within weeks we will get this sorted out. I then asked him why it was that marketing emails had continued to be sent out regularly, and he said that was the responsibility of a different team, and this is an issue we see often with companies. They'll be in trouble online, retailers, for example, there'll be a delivery snag, couriers let them down or whatever, and then they just continue with the marketing messages on social. And then on the comments, you'll see, but you, why are you still advertising? What about my money? And when there's no connection between marketing and complaints and you know, accounts handling and all of that, this is when you see this problem happen. Mm. And I see it time and time with companies, unfortunately. But yeah, as he said, he did concede that they had fallen down very badly with communication, which had caused a lot of the suspicion and everything else, lack of trust, or broken trust rather, and he vowed to personally deal with that, start I'm not sure exactly how he intended to do it, but get notifications and letters out to say, we're on this, we're so sorry that this happened, but, you know, you are going to get your money and, you know, the business will continue.
So they're not going under, they are just catching up on a very long backlog is the short version.
They had a series of unfortunate events, which anyone can understand, especially now and especially for a business in the travel industry.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we need to acknowledge that. But it comes down to communication, as we've said time and time again on the show, Pippa. If you have a problem, be transparent about it. Be honest. Address. Make sure you're answering your customers. Be, you know, in this case, be their accommodation owners or your the guests who are due refunds for one reason and another. To fall down on communication is always 100% going to not end well.
Yeah, Heather. Just in closing, have you, as we speak, received your money yet?
I have. I've actually got my money, so I'm delighted about that. And I just hope that all those other people continue pushing to get their money, because I think there are a lot of them out there. But I've got mine now.
I'm really glad to hear that. Heather John, thank
Excellent.
You so much for joining us. And there is at least a happy ending to her story. And please keep pushing. Don't let it go. If you are owed a refund, remind them that you are there and waiting for your refund. Or if you are, like Heather, an accommodation owner who is waiting for money to be paid over to you. Because, gosh, Wendy, I mean, for the innocent booker who's booking a place to stay, one would hate to imagine people arriving at an establishment where there's somebody a little bit less accommodating than Heather, who's not going to let them in the front door if she hasn't been paid.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't work like that, you see, because they'll pay their money to Safari Now or whatever other booking platform they use, and only when they leave does that agency middleman hand the money minus their commission to the likes of Heather. Mm-hmm. So there's not much risk for the people booking unless they need a refund if they overpay or something like that. It's with the accommodation venues that we're now getting very antsy because, you know, suddenly out of the blue, after Safari Now having been very efficient with their payments and done everything by the book, suddenly they just weren't getting paid and they weren't able to communicate efficiently, and that's what caused the problem. But yes, there are many people who owed refunds for other reasons as well. So we'll come back to the stories, see how they're doing in a couple of weeks.
And I mean, I really hope it is a resolvable one, because Wendy, as I said, and as Heather said, in the past, they have been a very reliable platform. I've used them absolutely. Numerous times over the years without any hiccups whatsoever. So one really hopes that this is one that they will get right and that they will just improve their communication with the people affected very well. Now, so a red flag went off when you said they had been bought 3 years ago by TravelStart, because we've had a listener who's been contacting us, Rodney, who has been struggling to get hold of TravelStart for feedback on a booking that was cancelled in March because of COVID. His question is, as far as you know, do they even still exist? Are they still in business? Because he just cannot get anybody to follow up on his request for his refund.
Okay, so that's something we have to take up. I do have a contact there. I can't say that I'm seeing a flurry of similar complaints, but I'll definitely look into it, because that's not on either. And as I say, it's death to consumer trust when that happens, when you just cannot make contact with the company.
I believe Vernon in Langebaan has something to weigh in on about this particular purchase of Safari Now by TravelStart. Vernon, good afternoon.
Hi, Pepper. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. And you?
I'm so glad I got through. I usually phone just before I witness news and I put me on hold. It's really problematic in the hospitality industry at the moment. I've been there for 29 years.
Yeah.
But I knew Matthew, the founder member of Safari Now. But I think what's happening is, and it's happening all over the show, because I started Galileo. Basically, what happens is they're trying to hold on to the refunding as long as possible. And I'll do the hard work for you. I will follow up the TravelStart and find out, and ask them three questions. Firstly, one is how much refund money are you holding? Where is it sitting? Is it in your current account or is it a suspense account? And where does it sit on your balance sheet as an asset or liability? So most of them, what they do is they put that refund as an asset on their balance sheet. And when they report back to the shareholders, it looks good. But once it's a liability, shareholders get jittery and jump ship. So the longer they will hold those refunds, the better it is for the company. So what I'll do is I'll get hold of the TravelStart guys and I'll pose the question to them, because I'm quite well known in the hospitality industry.
Okay, thanks, Vernon. And CC Wendy, please, because she's going to be pushing from her side please. As well. The address to use is consumer@nola.co.za, K-N-O-W-L-E-R. And I'm sure Wendy would appreciate your dropping her a mail to elaborate on that inquiry. And certainly a story then to be continued, Wendy.
Absolutely, Pippa. I look forward to that. Thank you, Vernon.
Thanks so much. That's where we have to say goodbye for today. Wendy, as always, thank you so much for your effort on behalf of our listeners, and look forward to chatting again next week, Wednesday.
Lovely. Thanks so much, Pippa. Bye-bye.